Travers Cosgrave, Reel 8. So you were you had this demand to get the armoured dozer.
Well, of course, if you think, imagine that nothing could be more important than to get his bridge laying tank across. But he had to wait till my time. Of course, I mean, I was trying to get it done, but there's no point having his bridge collapse on its back in the bottom of a hole. So I just said no. And my OC, Major Carter, was looking on at this time. And he never said a word, but I think he realised that I was right and I had done my job correctly. Anyway, it wasn't long before we got this tank, did get through. The third time when we let him down, the third time he succeeded in getting out and we'd have got across to the other side of Geldern and got their tanks over the moat the other side, while we ourselves were reconnoitering a better crossing which would be more suitable for wheel traffic in continuation of the one, the road we were working on. And it wasn't long before that, and I've got we got the dozer closing this gap, and we're bringing these and pushing in these the remains of these houses and running over them to form a thing that really we had done this job, and I left the platoon to get on with that and to find a good nice top finish. There is a way of laying bricks at 45 degrees so that they're pointing towards the traffic and they don't give under it. And we did that with new bricks from the builder's yard.
Laid by hand,
yes.
How many companies were involved in this?
Well, there were only one platoon of a company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the OC sent me ahead now to catch up with the brigadier who had got as far as Isham, 5 or 6 miles further on. And as soon as I could, I went forward and made use of his tank bulldozer, and the Oxford and Bucks Pioneer Platoon for labour to try and make a start on closing the gap that the Germans had blown in the small river bridge at Isham. It became fairly evident that the tank dozer was all right for pulling down houses and that sort of thing, but it really wasn't going to be able to get across the river to tackle the abutment on the other side. So I asked if there was a motorcycle, a DR, available. They said, "No, but you can have the CO's Jeep." And I said, "Well, I want to go back and rescue one of the armoured dozers which we're using at Geldern and bring it forward so that we can tackle the far bank seat and make a better job of the near side." Well, I went back and I asked my OC, who's around on the second bridge now, could I have this one if you finish with it? He said, "Yes, you can." But the driver said, "Well, now, I must warn you, the weld that holds the piston to the blade at the front is cracking. It will go in a while, but, you know, if what you want and what's available match, we'll be able to do it, but it won't last forever." But okay, on we go. So he followed me together, and on the way, coming back, I'd missed them on the other direction. There was the CRE and the chief engineer of the Corps coming back, who'd evidently been up to see the site and perhaps wondered where the devil I was. Anyway, I just waved to them and carried on with the bulldozer, and they were obviously seeing that we had the problem in hand. And yet, sure enough, the bulldozer did succeed in making making use of loose material on the near side, and he eventually could get and maneuver himself up onto the far bank seat and use the weight of the blade to push that down so that the tank bridge would get a proper bearing on the far side, a little bit below the crest, so that the tanks weren't being too much lit up into the air. But about this time, a relief appeared from 555 Company, Lieutenant Cowman, and he was to take over from me. So I said, well, it's all here. I've only got a couple of chaps, and I've told them to keep out of the way in that house over there. It's all yours. He was just about finished. I was extricating myself when there was another salvo, and bless me, hadn't he got a shrapnel in his knee? Well, I didn't wait for his sergeant to claim that it was his responsibility. I said, I'm resuming command here. I want you to work with me and get this done. So I didn't get away as early as I had expected. Alan Cowman was they got him back. I don't think it was the Maidstone sergeant who was actually with him on that occasion, but they did work closely together. And it wasn't long before the commanding officer of that company came up, and I took him into the O group that was going on at the time and introduced him, and he did produce a platoon commander sergeant who took over the job. During just about this time, some tipper lorries arrived again under one of my lance corporals from Geldern. They'd got some loose material, and this was very useful to pave the make a good job of the road into the, and the corporal told me that on his way back he'd been stopped and told to load up with prisoners to get them back out of the way. So he wasn't very good at that. He was very good at it, but he hadn't quite expected to be given that sort of a job. It's one didn't often come our way. But anyway, he got them safely back. And when I got back later on, he had discharged his responsibilities, and he was back in Geldern. The brigadier seemed rather pleased with me, so I suppose I have to recognise that he put in a word for me when I was awarded the MC sometime later.
Did you expect it?
No. There was no real confrontation with the enemy. It was just perseverance. Isham had a further reference to me because, although our advance was pinched out between the Highland Division or somebody on our left and the Americans on our right, it then became the headquarters for the planning of the assault crossing of the Rhine and the marshalling of the troops that were to cross on the bridges that had to be built. And remembering that I've told you that the ground was soaking wet, where on earth were these troops to be put so that they could ever get out again? And I was sent, the Welsh Division were given a week's leave in Brussels, but I was sent to Isham to help create areas, dry areas, access to areas where this assembly could take place. Funnily enough, the people running this were 8 Corps headquarters, who had been the people who had run the assembly for embarkation at West Ham Stadium. So, and I did know one of the people from schoolboy days, so it was a happy task, even if I wasn't in Brussels. Really, we had nothing very much to do now except get over the river, get over the Rhine early one morning, I think.
Do you know where you crossed it?
It'd be Wesson or some place like that, I think. I really, there would be no doubt about it from the history maps. I think there was only one bridge in our sector.
Mm. So was this a coordinated sort of crossing, or had the land on the far side?
No, it was an airborne landing on the far side.
Right. Okay.
It was the next airborne landing was on the far side of the Rhine.
Right.
Okay. And it was a very much a coordinated crossing. This was the culmination of all the work to get to the Rhine, to get through the Reichswald. It was a tremendously coordinated crossing, but we didn't have any part. Our job was to strike northwards and eastwards. We went through the corner of Holland that extends quite a way eastwards, and then on south of the coast eastwards across Germany. The names I'm not very good at. Winterswijk in Holland was a place I remember where an 88 gun held us up for a long time, but there was nothing that we actually had to do until a big bridge crossing, and the name of the place is going to escape me, and where we built right across a great big bridge across a gap in a great big bridge, a bridge with a curved upper surface. And we just put an 80-foot bridge over the gap in this.
So how difficult was that? I mean, you were being well supplied.
We were being. It was a difficult job. Again, Bruno Elgood was the bridge commander on this, and it was difficult because while the bridge would eventually be level, it had to be launched up the slope of the bridge. And then it had to come down onto the other part of the bridge. And of course, the bank seats had to be, were in a little bit where the trusses were strong and able to bear the weight. So it was a tricky bridge to launch, very tricky. But, and the other side, of course, this bridge was high, you know, 80 feet above the river, and to get from one side of it to the other was a day's march, in a sense. So I was sent over to the other side to make sure that it landed safely.
Your platoon must have been quite seriously experienced bridge builders by this time, weren't they?
We were very experienced, and the whole company was. If I say me, it usually, sometimes it is just the platoon, but often it's the whole company. Other occasions we would have a platoon from another company in to help us. Yes, we were experienced, but there were always, well, there were often fresh little problems which you had. You've got the Meccano, but you've still got to build a bridge. And then we were on into an area where there was an enemy officer training unit, and these lads came out and fought like devils. And they.
Whereabouts was this? I don't remember.
Yes, it was outside of town. Yes. And
what sort of a building was it?
No, I don't know. We actually ever saw they came. They came out to meet us. We didn't go in to meet them. They put up a very valiant resistance. It was about here. You asked, you know, do we come to them or they come to us? How do we liaise with the infantry in advance? And we were attached to the Oxford Bucks as usual. And first of all, there was a message from the front. Sapper wanted, there's a roadblock. And no sooner had we got near it, Sapper wanted, there's a mine. And true enough, in the field, just beside the road, we could see that somebody had been crossing what turned out to be a minefield and had been injured, foot blown off. Well, my lance sergeant with me now was
but you can see his face.
I can see his face. Never mind, he's gone. He'd come to us as a replacement a month or so before, but he'd proved himself, and he was a regular. But he said, "I'll go in there, sir." And so sure enough, he did. He got the marker tapes out and the pins for marking it down, and his bayonet, he made a safe path into this minefield, rolled the injured fellow over into the path that he had cleared and drew him back to safety. And these were shoe mines, anti-personnel mines. But I had meantime gone on to the roadblock in front, and taking a chance, I didn't think there'd be mines there as well. And I got my half-track to drive up reasonably closely, and I felt for tripwires as best I could, but there didn't seem to be anything. So I drew out a cable and a winch on the front of these vehicles. So I drew out the cable and hitched this round the tree that was across the road and buttoned it back on itself, and told the half-track to go back a bit and then draw in the cable, and I came back with them because there might have been a blast. But there wasn't. And we succeeded with a couple of attempts to clear the logs off the road, and the Banyan cars or whatever they were had been held up could get on. So it was quite a morning. But the Oxford and Bucks could get ahead. So that was a typical example of the sort of laser.
Yes.
Nothing... You know, there might be nothing else now for 50 miles.
Yes, yeah.
And in fact, it was probably on this same stretch of road that I was swanning it, probably ahead of the infantry, because there didn't seem to be anything around. And I got to the edge of the river Weser. And there, a quarter of a mile downstream, was the bridge at Hoya. And not a sound. On our bank, nor the enemy bank. And the bridge had been blown in the centre span, and something had been done to the side spans. But I decided that I wasn't going to go and inspect it in detail. I could see that there had been damage to the side spans, but the centre span was gone. So I got back out of obvious view and relayed by wireless that this was the situation ahead of us. I don't know who actually built the bridge at Hoya. It wasn't us. The six large aerial bombs had been put on the bridge, and four of them had gone off, both on the centre span and one each on the side spans, so that the British were able to build a bridge over the centre span and drive carefully on the side spans to get across.
So where did you cross that river?
We went over that bridge, yeah. Probably the next day. I forget just what our movements were. I only hope my early intelligence was a help. And that perhaps they got a bomb disposal chap up to deal with the bombs, because nobody likes them.
Yeah.
In too intimate contact with them. Then we... The Aller was the next river, and that joins the Weser not very far north of that point. But there is a triangular bit of land between them. And we knew that the enemy had retreated from the Weser to the Aller, and were going to give us a bad time in crossing the Aller. We were to cross at Wraytham. And there was a bad time crossing at Wraytham. There was the infantry had a very difficult time in Wraytham, and the Monmouthshire, I believe, second Mons had a very difficult time. But we were to build there was to be an assault crossing a few miles downstream, which would get spring gun carriers and the like across. And we were to build a pontoon bailey bridge close to the line of the existing roadway. And it was some time before we could get to the bridge site, and a lot longer before we drove the enemy away from the opposite side. There was a play in the not surprisingly, a play. The river ran in a plain, and it was about 2 kilometres to the higher ground at the far side of the plain. We knew the enemy would be there until we could actually get over and drive them off, but they were occupying any farmsteads and the like nearer, and it was more difficult to drive them out of these when we didn't really control that bank at all. But we did succeed in building our rafts first of all to be part of the bridge, and secondly to ferry the bridge materials for the far landing bay to be constructed on the far side. And in the meantime, we were building the landing bay on the near side. The enemy didn't like us doing this, but it seemed they'd nothing left but solid shot. They had no high explosive shells left, and we were able to put up with a few solid shots. The shrapnel didn't worry you too much. So we managed to build the near landing bay quite surprisingly well. It was on the other side. I was telling you the story about the bridge panel party that was down and up again before the panel had managed to fall. Well, there was an officer panel party carrying those panels from the bank side up to where they were to be built. That was the legend was. I don't know whether it actually happened or not.
So how long did it take you to build that?
Oh, bank? About 3 days.
Yeah.
Mm. About 3 days.
Mm. And then over you went.
And then we could go over. There was a story that the I don't know whether it was the chief engineer again or the corps commander who came along to see how things were happening when the enemy opened up. And he curtailed his inspection. Yes, now that I discovered the lovely thing on that bridge site, when the lorries came up with the bridging materials on them, as they had, it was a big bridge, the materials had to come from a long way back, and so you had 6-ton lorries instead of 3-ton lorries. Now, 3-ton lorries had those awful wheel cases intruding in the back, in the loading space. But a 6-ton lorries had a high platform. The only thing you need to do with a 6-ton lorry was back it up to a tree, put a rope round the tree and round the front of the load until the driver to go home. It's a wonderful way of unloading bridging materials. Yeah, we did that, yes. We did that. We got softish ground, yes.
So I think you've got all the tricks of the trade by then.
We were pretty good at it by that time.
To do it, yeah. Right. Travers Cosgrove, end of reel 8.